Not if, said Brad. When?
Absolutely not.
Adrian Kossoff's dark bearded face reminded Brad of the images of pirates he had seen in videos when he'd been a lad. Scowling, dark eyes glowering menacingly, lips pulled tightly across his teeth. All he needs is an eye patch, Brad thought. To Kossoff's image on his comm screen, Brad asked, Is that the executive committee's decision? Then the 3-minute wait. Brad shifted his attention to the imagery coming from the probes floating among the octopods deep in the ocean. They looked so peaceful, he thought. Not a care in the world. No problems, no conflicts.
It's my decision, Kossoff snapped. I don't need the committee to tell me what the mission protocol says. One of the prime directives is to avoid making contact with the aliens until all the preparatory steps have been taken. Those directives were written by some of the best scientific minds on Earth. I'm not going to let a junior member of the anthropology group go against them.
Brad felt no surprise, no anger, not even resentment. He realized that he'd known all along what Kossoff's answer would be. We've already made contact with them of a sort, he argued to the smoldering image on the comm screen. We've placed a half dozen probes among them. If they're truly intelligent, they must realize that those probes came from someplace. Kossoff's response when it came was surprisingly moderate.
That's true. It was a risk to put the probes among them, but a risk we had to take. We can't study the beasts without them.
They seem to have accepted them easily enough, Brad pointed out. And again he waited. At last Kossoff answered,
That's as far as we're going at present. Our task is to decipher their language, if the noises they make are truly a language. Once that's done, we'll decide on our next step.
Brad knew that Kossoff was right. Direct contact with an alien species was fraught with unknowns. He recalled how circumspect the alien predecessors of New Earth had been, constructing a whole planet and populating it with human-like creatures. They had spent centuries carefully orchestrating their contact with us. But what harm could it do? Brad asked himself, and answered, We don't know. That's the point. We don't know, and when you don't know what the consequences of an action would be, you proceed slowly, carefully. Once the damage is done, you can't undo it, so you proceed along the path that has the least risk of damage. Kossoff demanded, Do you understand me? No contact. I understand, Brad said. No contact. Yet while he waited for Kossoff's next message, Brad realized he had enough of the octopod's sounds in his files to study them for meaning. It's not contact, he told himself, but it's a start. Kossoff said,
You're due to return here to Odysseus next week. You'd better spend your time preparing for that.
Brad nodded, and realized that his request to make contact with the octopods had wiped out any ideas Kossoff might have had about prolonging his stay at Alpha. Grinning to himself, he thought, I'm a kind of devious devil after all. Return. Despite himself, Brad felt his innards coiling tensely as the shuttlecraft approached Odysseus. He was sitting in the shuttle's command chair, up forward, surrounded by control panels and sensor readout displays that he ignored. His eyes were fastened on the view through the command center's broad glass steel windows. The starship, an immense island floating in space, growing so huge that it filled the windows entirely. Odysseus was really a city in space, Brad realized. Compared to it, the shuttlecraft was a seed, a piece of flotsam, a baby returning to its womb.
5 clicks and approaching on the line, said the unemotional voice of the flight controller from the screen in the center of the panel of consoles.
It showed an oblong entry port in the smooth side of the starship, waiting for Brad's craft to glide into the hangar inside. Brad had nothing to do but watch. His approach to Odysseus was completely automated. If anything went wrong, the flight controller would take command of the shuttlecraft remotely. Like my dream of the tractor, Brad thought. I don't know how to handle this craft. I don't have to know how. Everything's being done automatically. So he sat with his hands in his lap as the entry port of the starship's hull grew bigger, wider, like a mouth ready to engulf him. My 3-month exile is finished, he told himself. Now I go back to work as an anthropologist.
Then he smiled to himself and added, plus something more. Brad had copied all the data that the probes had taken of the aliens swimming in Alpha's ocean. Every squeak and twitter they uttered. Every move they made. He would hand the official files over to Kossoff, of course, or whoever Kossoff designated to receive them. Probably the head of the linguistics team, Brad thought. But he had his own copy of all that data, and he intended to study it himself with Jonesy's help. Brad was determined to make sense out of the octopod's language. Touchdown! The voice of the flight director jarred Brad out of his thoughts. Velocity zero, grapplers connected. Flight is complete. Welcome home, Dr. McDaniels. I'm back, Brad realized. Back aboard Odysseus. For the first time in 3 months, he felt gravity tugging at his arms, felt his heart thumping to pump blood through his arteries. Now let's see if Kossoff's allowed Felicia to greet me at the airlock. It took nearly half an hour for the flight controller's crew to seal shut the outer hatch and pump the hangar full of breathable air. Brad sat impatiently through the procedure until he heard the director's voice announce, "You are free to leave the shuttlecraft." Brad got to his feet, slowly, carefully, bending over to avoid bumping his head against the ceiling panels. He edged through the consoles toward the craft's main hatch. The ground crew was swinging the hatch open when he got to it. Ducking through the hatch, Brad saw that the big hangar chamber was empty, except for the half-dozen members of the ground crew. "Welcome back, Dr. McDaniels," said one of them, sticking out his hand. "Careful of the steps now." Clasping the man's steadying hand, Brad made it down the middle ladder and onto the hangar floor. The half-G of the ship's gravity field felt good, solid, after his months of weightlessness. Back to normal, he thought. "Dr. Littlejohn said he's waiting for you in his office," the crewman said. Nodding, Brad asked, "Anybody else?" "Nope, just the pygmy." "He's an aborigine," Brad snapped, "from Australia." The crewman laughed. "Yeah, we know. We just call him a pygmy for fun." Brad walked away from him, toward the hatch at the far side of the hangar. "I wonder what they call me for fun," he asked himself. The crewman called out, "We'll have your personal stuff delivered to your quarters. It might take a half hour or so." "That's fine," Brad said over his shoulder. Then he added, "Thanks." There were berths for two more shuttlecraft in the hangar, but both were empty. Probably gone down to Gamma's surface, Brad thought. Why isn't Felicia here? It's a working day, of course, but she could have taken a few minutes off to greet me. He crossed the hangar floor alone and yanked open the hatch. And there was Felicia, standing on the other side, her smile radiant. Before Brad could utter a word, she rushed into his arms and kissed him soundly. "You're here," he gasped. "Where else would I be?" Felicia replied, clinging to him. Suddenly Brad felt embarrassed. This side of the hatch was a passageway with people walking briskly past, grinning at the young couple locked in each other's arms. "It's good to see you," Brad said, still holding her close. "It's wonderful to see you," said Felicia. They disengaged, and she started walking along the passageway. "I've got to get back to my lab," she said. "The ground team has sent up dozens of soil and plant samples from Gamma. We're all working flat out, analyzing them." "Great," Brad said. "Dr. Littlejohn wants to see you." Nodding, "Yes, I know." "We can meet for lunch." "In the cafeteria. High noon?" Brad realized he didn't know what time it was. He remembered that he was scheduled to land at the hangar at 10:10. "Noon," he echoed, feeling awkward, almost disoriented. "If Littlejohn's going to keep you longer, call me." "Right." Raising her eyes to meet his, Felicia added, "I've taken the afternoon off." He couldn't help grinning. "Great. That's wonderful. See you in the cafeteria." "High noon," Brad said. Reintegration. The next 2 weeks were a blur in Brad's mind. Felicia was warm and willing and seemed completely content to share her life with him. She maintained her own quarters, but spent most of her nights at Brad's place. For his part, Brad requisitioned a housekeeping robot to make sure his quarters were as sparkling clean as possible. Littlejohn assigned Brad to interviewing individuals in the various scientific teams. "I want to build a picture of how the demands of their scientific investigations are reshaping their social structure," the aborigine told Brad. "Their social structure is based on their university experience," Brad replied. committee hierarchies, competition to make new discoveries, that sort of thing. Yes, Little John agreed, unconsciously swiveling his desk chair back and forth. But they are beginning to face new situations, new problems. Brad knew that the planetology team was striving to understand the mechanics of the Mithras system and the cause of the disturbance that had thrown Gamma and Beta into such eccentric, elongated, unstable orbits. The biologists, on the other hand, were happily analyzing samples of soil and living organisms, vegetable and animal, brought up from Gamma's surface by the teams they were sending down to the planet. The teams landed furtively at spots far from any of the aliens' villages, high in the rugged hills, deep in the thick forests. They came down at night, spent a few hours collecting specimens, then quickly returned to Odysseus. So far, they had been successful in collecting their samples without being seen by the humanoids. So far, Brad thought. Sitting in front of Little John's desk, Brad thought his department head looked almost like a child in his big padded swivel chair. The furniture is too big for him, Brad realized. I wonder if that makes him uncomfortable, makes him feel like a pygmy. Little John seemed perfectly at ease, though. He was saying to Brad, "Sooner or later, we're going to make contact with the aliens. It's inevitable. That's when things will get really interesting." Brad nodded his agreement. But he didn't tell his department head that he was spending his evenings listening to the twittering language of Planet Alpha's octopods, trying to make some sense of their language. He kept his quest to himself and Felicia. "There," Brad said. "See? It's the same sound. Every time they come close to one of the probes, they make the same sound." Felicia was sitting next to him on the sofa in Brad's snug little sitting room. The wall display showed a hazy view of a trio of octopods swimming alongside one of the teardrop-shaped probes he had sent into their ocean. Along the bottom of the display ran a crawling, spiky curve, an analysis of the sounds the octopods were making. "It's the same sound," Felicia agreed, pointing at the jittering curve. Looking down at the tablet on his lap, Brad called to the screen, "Show scene 47. The screen immediately cut to an image of two octopods swimming side by side, intertwining their tentacles with each other as they uttered a burst of chatter. The curves snaking across the bottom of the screen looked like the ones they had seen in the earlier imagery. "Compare data curves," Brad commanded. The image of the octopods winked out, and two sets of curves filled the screen. "They look almost identical," Felicia said. "Overlay the curves," Brad called out. "They are identical." "To within a few percent," said Brad. "Could it be their phrase for greeting?" Felicia wondered. With a nod, Brad replied, "That's their word for hello."
"You think?"
"Makes sense."
"So that gives us another word," she said.
"We've got hello, food, warm, and cold," said Brad. "On our own. If we had access to the linguist's analyzer, we could go much faster."
"Why don't you ask them about it?" Felicia suggested.
Brad hesitated. "Might cause trouble. They might resent our sticking our noses into their turf." Felicia arched a brow at him.
"You'd have to be subtle about it. Ask them how they're getting along, what progress they're making, that sort of thing."
"Get them to talk about themselves."
"That's right."
Sitting up straighter and running a hand through her hair, she added,
"I'll bet I could get one of them to tell me what they've accomplished."
Brad slid an arm across her shoulders. "No, you don't, Delilah. You stay with me." She grinned at him.
"I could pump one of the women in their group. Women talk a lot more easily than men."
Brad shook his head. "No deal."